I guess here's what I was told, and here's what. Sorry, hi everybody. Sorry I'm late. I'm
this is like, who are there. You? Why are you here?
Yeah. Was told this was discussions and QAs and kind of examples and tips about various advanced quote networking things. Let me see. I have found the more advanced networking things that I have touched and used. Once you actually start using them, they're kind of barbaric. In general, two things, at least their implementations and their use. Just because they are advanced things, there's not a huge user base, there's a lot of things to cut yourself on, there's a lot of like, oh yeah, it's in the commit message, you know. Right. So, seriously. So, lag. Lag is used, can make arm gestures, things like that. Who in here is familiar with lag? So I'm not just repeating silly stuff. One person. Okay, so lag is link aggregation interface, right? And on FreeBSD, the most experiences I have with it are in the 7 branch and in the 8.0 release of FreeBSD. I understand there's been a few fixes that are pretty substantial. I ain't one. I can't wait to use them. The lag. What it does is you end up bonding two physical Ethernet interfaces into one interface. There's a whole bunch of options for this. Question, yes?
So is this basically talking LACP to a switch, or is this something else?
You can do that. Okay, so you can do that. That is not how I do things. I do things cheap and dirty often. So
LACP is the expensive way.
Well, this thing does full-on LACP, and you're able to do, there's a couple of Cisco things that are very, very well supported, the Cisco Ethernet channel, something, something, right. Something, and some other cool stuff. I play in cheap land. When I'm saying cheap land, like the last data center drop I did of two cabinets, the whole thing was like 130K for all the hardware, like cheap land. Guy in the cabinet next to me, his routers were... His two redundant routers were the price of our entire drop. So the doing all this stuff. Yes, there are options for all that. I'm not very familiar with them. I'm sorry. The primary interest that I have in lag is high availability networking, right? So I want to have two physical switches on every switch layer in my universe. I want to have them both live and linked and active, and I want to be able to pull the plug out of the back of either one of them at any time and not lose any packets, or at least come close to it from an application use perspective, right? So in that, lag is a really, really useful tool. One server, two network interfaces out to the lag's switches, excuse me, out to just any type of switches, which can then be taken up to whatever's providing them their service, router, typically. Or at least in the deployments I'm doing, that's about the topology. So with that stated, you run into some very funky stuff with lag when you get into cheap unmanaged switches, which is one of my favorite things in the universe. Less attack surface area for internet-facing applications, less management surface area, because the more of this redundant stuff and the environment's working, the more pieces you introduce in your universe, you exponentially have to manage more things in the context of each other, right? So if you're going out into unmanaged switches from that point, the routing topology, I'm kind of going backwards from the server back up to the router here. The router's using a bunch of CARPT interfaces to deal with router redundancy, right? So the routers end up coming, who's in the room familiar with CARP? All right, OpenBSD, PF, fun stuff, and FreeBSD and PFSense, all the fun stuff. So that's about like a third of the room. CARP is Common Address Redundancy Protocol, and it's basically like Cisco's VRRP or HSRP, even though those are somewhat different. And basically you just have a virtual IP address that bounces between two boxes that each to, in this case, routers that have their own physical IP address. Okay. So using CARP and unmanaged switches as some creative use of crossover cables, you can basically have a very, very, very inexpensive, high availability, very, very, very robust redundant network, right?
With at least two redundant switches as well as redundant routers.
Exactly, exactly. The reason I do this out of paranoia and fear when running ISP stuff years ago, we had just about every model of switch die on us I could possibly think of. And so any single, I always find it very funny to walk into all these highly, like super high availability environments. Oh, this is awesome. This is all great stuff. And I got one big Cisco switch. And so if that thing dies, how long is it going to take to replace it? Oh, it won't die. Right, okay. And if that thing dies, how long is it going to take to replace it? Oh, well, we got this really awesome vendor in California. It's like, he's going to order it from a dude in Taiwan. And so, yeah, okay, cool. So you just spent like X amount of money with N number of developers and all this other stuff doing all this redundancy. And like, that's a really, really important little box. Okay, so that kind of crap just makes me lose my mind. So getting back to the cooler side of this, or the setup, two arms, replicate the network. The router is my head, and so here's the deal. So you have two complete sides now, where everything in your network is completely redundant. Two routers, crossover cable, CARP, and all that fun. Virtual IP on one side, unmanaged switches down below, and the CARP IP, when you have these two switches with the crossover cable, you're not creating a loop, so you don't get the crazy ARP freakouts of plugging switches into each other in this way, because actually your routes flow either one direction or the other. So in this cheap kind of janky setup, if the route is over on side A, right, if your router IP is over on this side, coming through this switch is acting like it's just, you know, one tier down in the switching topology. And when your router fails up here, this side re-ARPs everything and says, and the CARP stuff says, hey, no, the ARP address and the routes and everything is over here. And the switches kind of shake their head and, oh, we ARP that way. And all the traffic just goes. It's pretty cheap, very, very robust, right? Or it's very, very cheap and pretty robust. Anyway, so with this scenario, then you come down to how do I get this to two boxes? And dealt with this in two different ways. One is to have your application model, if you're spread out and you're scaling horizontally, meaning lots and lots of machines doing the same thing, then you just do it halvesies. One, two, three, four, right? All the odds on one side, all the evens on the other, whatever. And ta-da, you just took your entire application. And if you've got enough bandwidth between that crossover cable, that becomes your choke point, which, you know, the switches I'm talking about, if you're doing gigabit copper, we're talking about $300 a pop for these switches, right, for gigabit stuff. I'll get into the bigger part of this in just a second, because that does become a choke point once your application starts growing. But gigabit copper inside your cabinet for this kind of cheapo setup can often be a profound amount of bandwidth, right? And that choke point is not nearly as painful as you think it would be. Measure from your boxes, MRTG from your boxes, it's great. Anyways, so everybody got that? Everybody bored with this part of this? Okay, this is this unmanaged setup that works pretty slick. I'm sorry, if you have application on a server on both sides. The lag stuff comes back in if you want one server to be using both sides of this network, right? So the lag stuff gets a little bit tricky when you're doing this CARP's dual switched environment thing. You basically either have to have all the boxes that you're working with in this network layer lagged, doing this cheap unmanaged switch jazz, or else you have to have them single IPs, because you get into all these really rare little weird conditions where suddenly at an ARP level, the packets can't find each other quite that nicely. They're trying to route in the wrong direction. They're trying to, you get into some very, very weird hijinks. So it's basically, with the cheap switches, all lag servers or no lag servers and split them up 50-50, right? So that's just kind of a general rule of thumb. Anybody have questions about that, I'll move it to a different thing. Okay, cool. The
which platform is lag supported on?
I'm pretty sure that the lag interface, oh, basically you guys can correct me because that's, the lag interface is
trunk,
right. Okay, that, a lot of the same feature set, a lot of the same functionality from what I understand. That's trunk, I believe it's lag on NetBSD. Let me see, there are similar tools in Linux land. I have very, very little experience with them. With those, in those environments,
so
yeah. What is it?
Well, there's an IP multipath.
IP multipath. Okay. The everything I've done with Linux in these environments has been the has-use scenario, one on each side. The okay. The next part of this, trying to move fast. So, one other byproduct of this cheapo switch bit is packets periodically get a little confused and dupes start flying around in your universe. If you're working with relatively sane protocols, I'm going to consider SSH and HTTP relatively sane protocols. Like, gee, they're built to go over TCP and be fairly redundant or fairly resilient. UDP for DNS, pretty okay. Starts getting into problems a little bit. Start dropping or duplicating packets. But you can run names in kind of in this environment. And if you can just put up with the extra jitter, then you're all golden. But if you can't put up with the jitter, so more recent drops, suddenly having to drop managed switches that have their own LACP implementations. And again, I'm trying to go cheap, super cheap, fast to replace. Want to be able to like walk over to JNR and just like pull it off the shelf and get this thing sorted out. Or I don't want to have to, in the event of a failure, in the event of a failure, I don't want to have to basically sit and explain to the boss, like, okay, so we're going to need, you know, basically we need a quick, you know, $8,000 because I got to buy two switches and, like, sorry, that sucks. Or, and when I say two switches, I say this because Cisco is very good about this stuff. I mean, Cisco stuff is, of course, wonderful, and there's reasons why we're getting Cisco. Like a serial port on the back, for goodness sakes. But, where are we at? Oh, thank you. RC.com. This is like a stage show where there's like a bunch of like girls with like big feathers in the background, like dancing.
Can you
kick
fire?
So, So basically, where was that? But when you get into all these different brands of switches and managed switches, the link aggregation stuff in the switches, again, because not a lot of people on the planet care about this kind of stuff, it ain't that polished. It ain't that hot. So it's not like you could take an SMC switch or something else that's got, you know, lag 802. Anybody remember what it is? The specification? Yeah, you're getting there. It was in the lag man page actually, because they talk about it.
Oh, AE, isn't it?
There's an 802.3AD. Yes, you're correct. That a prize? Throw it at you. So the 802.3AD, right? You go look at the specs in various places, and it says, hey, this is a spec, this is a protocol, and it's a standard. And Gray Super, who can remember my favorite quote of Gray Super's? Yeah, and the great thing about standards is there's so many to choose from. So the various implementation at whatever point in time of 802.3AD, between all these vendors and hardware's firmware, and is it even updatable firmware, or is it, how cheap is this thing, or how nice is this thing, or how well supported is this thing? You get off into like wild edge cases. What I'm getting at is, you know, brand X switch and brand Y switch, yeah, I'm not going to bet the bank that this is going to work, that you're going to actually get a reliable link out of this thing. So when you buy in the switches, you buy in pairs, as far as I'm concerned. So the
I've never tried to do a gig switch versus a 10-100 with this. So.
Say what?
Have you tried like using a gig switch on one and then
a 10-100? I have. It failed miserably. The actually in the case that I tried that hacking round, it did fail miserably because of all of these framing issues between the gigabit and then not cool to make a little teeny switch without a brain doing that stuff. Anyways, the point I'm getting at here is okay. So again, I go for then the cheap stuff, and you get a bunch of have I dissed that Cisco or recommended them? Netgears, that's what I've been very fond of for a while, because the price is very, very right. And the dude for Jumbo Frames and all kinds of cute things. So these big managed Netgears, you can do this trunking, and you can do up to 8 ports or something on some of the bigger, like 48-port switches. You can take all of those and trunk that entire link. So you can really like relieve the bottleneck that this becomes in your network for doing the redundant stuff with lag stuff on both sides. But the biggest thing that it gets you is that protocols. Any but MySQL people in the house? Where's Hans?
He just left.
Oh, I was just gonna put on MySQL. Wait till he's back. No, the MySQL, for example, has anybody familiar with the MySQL packets? Quote, quote. Yeah, documentation for it's awesome. The really awesome. So MySQL sends all of this stuff that are control messages as quote packets. Now, some of the documentation, and then starting looking, digging into some of the implementation and the source, and kind of groping around in there. Some of it actually is packets. Some of it ends up being a full like SQL-ish payload that goes back and forth between the client and the server. Or this packet, it's all called packets in the documentation. These packets don't like being duplicated. That will start cutting all of your MySQL socket connections real fast if you have a lot of noise on the wire. Duplicate packets in MySQL, bad form. So managed switches and doing this trunking between the switches is absolutely requisite because basically when you trunk these two switches and you use this lag stuff, both the switches share the same ARP table, right? They both understand each other. They both understand where all the rest of the NICs on both sides of this redundant network exist and what their MAC address is. So they also understand really much better than where your routable IP is up the chain. So basically, it just relieves a host of problems. So you know, you configure these things, save your configs, turn off the config ports, and just call them unmanaged switches. And ta-da, you got the same thing. All right, last thing, CARP on FreeBSD. This is probably a up at the top, this is, I hope not inflammatory, because I really much love CARP, and I love it on pfSense, and I love it on, you know, all sorts of platforms. I love it on OpenBSD, that I've used it. One big difference that can create severe problems in all of this stuff is that CARP on FreeBSD does not have an implementation yet that supports sending all of your CARP traffic across a crossover cable or a dedicated interface. So typically when you set up a CARP machine, you have, or a machine that you're going to set up the CARP with, let me say, you have two boxes. They each have an IP, configure the virtual IP, and they pass all this pfSync data over, you can use a crossover cable, something, another network, depends, but a crossover cable is most common for a two-box deployment. They send all this pfSync data over. Now that stuff's awesome, and that basically is all of your PF state tables, your socket connection states. It's really sweet. This is all that connection state data that makes it so you can pull the plug out of one of the boxes, the IP jumps, and you don't even lose your SSH shells. It's like, it's beautiful. But on FreeBSD, the actual CARP traffic, the traffic that's used to basically take and say which box is the master for a given IP address, that traffic flows across the interface to, from which the IT is connected to. Does that make sense? Did I get that out right? Okay, so if you got a box, say, we'll call it Ethernet W for LAN, and we got a box with ETH L for LAN on one side, and you got a box with ETH 0, which has just got a crossover cable in between. If you've got a CARP IP that you've assigned to ETH LAN on both sides, all the CARP traffic is going to travel over ETH LAN. So if you don't trust, if you have an untrustworthy environment up here, your entire IP network can be shut down with spurious CARP traffic being tossed towards your machines, broadcast to your machines. Does that all make sense?
I'm totally missing you here.
Yes.
Are you talking about the status stuff?
Yeah.
The state stuff?
The state stuff.
Well, why isn't it going between 0 and 0?
Ah, because the FreeBSD implementation of PF and CARP, they have not gotten around to it.
The PF sync part
absolutely goes over the crossover kit. And it's a requisite, it's really requisite to make the technology work, because that is a ton of data.
Yeah.
Right?
I can speak to all the PFCs, but on the CARP, which is on the same network where your BIP is, CARP,
yep,
is your BIP, that's multi-sync on the network, but it's protected by a password, like, you know, a passphrase is very long.
Plain text. The passphrase is plain text. I don't know if it's hashed, but it's susceptible to either replays, or there's only there's a limit of 256 of them. Pretty quick and easy to flood the traffic with.
You put a string, like a 128-bit or 256-bit key on it, which is encrypted with, let's say you make a 256-bit key. It's
not a few
bits. It's encrypted with like a 256-bit hash, essentially.
Got it.
Which would be kind of hard to crack.
I'm sitting here drooling. That's about it. All I can do.
What OpenBSD does.
Yeah. It's encrypted. Well, OpenBSD can also send the traffic across a dedicated Ethernet interface. So you can use the same interface as your PF, your PF.
Because the CARP has to detect. The point of the CARP is they're detecting if the other guy lost the connection on where that bit is, because maybe you lost the connection just on that interface, not on the other interface. And like the whole box might, your peer, the box might not have gone down, but his NIC might have gone down. So he's still talking over PF, because that's a separate NIC, but the NIC that talks to a particular interface for a particular bit, that NIC might have gone down. And now he won't respond to his CARP, although he's still responding over the PF.
I understand the pattern and the case. To my knowledge, the way that I had set this up in Open before, I could be missing some more subtle points about actually making CARP awesome and how it could actually awesome and secure are often at odds. The idea of running the CARP traffic over that dedicated interface, like a crossover cable, that is the most awesome example to me. Basically, that one machine is going to already detect that, oh my gosh, I just lost my LAN interface, and over that dedicated interface, send the CARP traffic to, like, yeah, man, you're the master. You over there. That's all yours.
I suppose
you
do it
that way.
If the one side realizes you lost the NIC, you tell the other guy, okay, take over. Let's say if the master realizes you lost the NIC, you can say over the common interface, take over to the other guy.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Oh, good catch. Awesome. Let me see. And then what was I going to say about the very last thing about this? Okay, yeah, bingo. Lag then, setting up development environments with all this crazy redundant networking and setting up development environments using jail. How many people in the room know what jail is? How many of the people in the room knew that I was going to talk about jails? Yeah. I
assumed you would.
Yeah. So if you have, severely jailed development environment on some small number of servers replicating all of this fantastic complexity and wonderfulness that, you know, like you now are scratching your head over a lot. Suddenly there becomes all kinds of fun things that we have tried to do with these development environments, including if we've got all kinds of NICs all over our world, well, the DevBoxes have plenty of NICs, four apiece. We'll take and do a lag bonded interface on one, and we'll have two regular interfaces on the others, because we're constantly moving stuff around and doing this and that and the other and da da da. Well, there's some really bizarre stuff that happens when you start doing that on the same network. What ends up happening is that you get into all kinds of very funky, weird cases where the CARP interfaces basically start getting all kinds of basically all kinds of packets end up getting very, very, very confused coming in and out of these boxes between these interfaces, right? And you can basically get into a state where I'm trying to figure out how to explain some of this.
It's not easy to explain
because it's stupid. It was not a good idea. Basically, once you start
carving and
yeah, once you have lagged interfaces on the same side as the primary interfaces, we run into all kinds of weird, like hard to figure out problems. You have two lag interfaces, you have two interfaces that are just straight, they're all going to the same network, you're running a ton of jails inside behind all of this. The jails IP stack is cut off, like, in terms of what the jail actually has access to, somewhere well above parts of the lower levels of the network stack, right? So what happens is you'll get a jail that's trying to reach another jail, and the packets are trying to route locally in the kernel over to the jail that's sitting over in this bonded interface, right, or whatnot, and it can't figure out that it's got to go out the front door and come back in. You get into just all kinds of stupidity in this kind of environment. So basically what I'm saying is all this complexity is great, and it lets you sleep at night when switches die and boxes go offline and all that kind of stuff, but if you start just going too nuts with this, you will shoot yourself.
So jailing plus lag, you know, jailing plus
well, it's actually lag interfaces and straight interfaces on the same network, logical network segment, from the same box. It'll just mess your world up.
So what you're saying is that if the jail, which is using a regular interface, tries to contact the jail, which is using the lag interface,
yes,
the packets get lost.
Yes. However, in other environments, actually our environment, where you have boxes where you have a bunch of jails on two interfaces on the same network, everything's hunky-dory. Everything's just fine, right? So some of this to me leads to that a lot of this, at the end of the day, a lot of this really awesome redundancy stuff, it's not used by a critical mass of people. It's not pushed to a level where people are finding and just killing themselves with these bugs enough that they become a priority to really... It's a lot of edge cases, right? It's a lot of stuff that's not worked on as fast as everything else. Any questions? And I'm thank you for listening to all that. One of the back.
The network diagram is going to be available with examples of these setups.
I got a sharp one. We got some paper up here. You know,
it's not enough ink in the world.
Sure. Sure.
We'd lose half the state of Maine. Paper, trees.
Yeah. Yes. This is dumb.
So this might be kind of a dumb question, but
never is.
So you have a crossover between the two boxes that manages when one of the NICs goes down.
Okay. So in the CARP setup. Let me see. In the CARP setup, yes, those boxes have a lot of NICs. One of them, in typical routing type environments, you'll have NICs that hit two networks at least, and then another that you use as a crossover between the boxes for PFSync traffic.
Yes. If that PFSync crossover, one of those NICs goes down.
Well, then one of the sides is going to assume itself as master.
Okay.
Right.
It's just synchronizing the states between the two.
What if the crossover cable fails? Do both NICs assume that it's down and that they're matching?
Yeah, dude, you just hit the thing that the last thing in all of this wonderful redundancy that I have tried to solve.
Split brain.
And yes, you get into weird split. You do get into weird split brain situation, but the well, there's a lot of luck in there because just about every time I've had a problem with this, I've been lucky enough that one side's picked up master and the other's dropped. But and that's just a luck thing. But let me throw one thing out. I have tried to solve that link because that one little crossover cable, which I'm real particular about those. Those are in a special drawer in my world. Little crossovers that are about yay long that I don't want. Don't you be touching that because, oh man, that one cable is real important to me. In trying to solve this problem, you end up basically building out another set of switched infrastructure, right? Because so you could use lag, you could run CARP traffic, or you could run your PSN sync traffic over a lag interface. Tried that in 3DC 7 era, it didn't work. That was a bad idea. That was just too goofball. And I could have been screwing up the configs and doing something strange, but that didn't seem to work. The second thing is that then, when you get into adding, doing anything else with your, how could I put it, with these interfaces on the outside, you get into a switched layer. I'm sorry, the switched layers come in with the idea of wanting to have more than one redundant unit for either for load sharing or basically so you don't lose all your load if you lose one of the boxes or blah, 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 blah. You basically get into every direction you go out of this, enough complexity that it becomes really hard to describe without really big pieces of paper.
Sure. Now, I'd just let you know that proprietary vendors, one of them just claims that it has enough intelligence within its software that it will know if a crossover from a cable fails, one will take over and you're fine. Now, Kia...
Are those the Junipers that run FreeBSD?
No, that was Checkpoint.
That runs FreeBSD.
Kia running Burp, which is, you know, their own form of Burp, they just recommended plugging in, you know, to switches. So,
right.
They put it on VLAN and really don't have anything to worry about at that point, assuming that you're a switch.
Right. It can't be that hard, to be honest. I mean, to me, there's two ways, and I'd love to hear a critique of this, to actually deal with it. Either you're having shell scripts run on the boxes that are talking to the interfaces, you know, internally,
right,
over the CARP interfaces, the VIP interfaces, or externally, you have scripts running that are looking at the number one, the status of the two boxes individually.
That gets into a lot. There's a lot of stuff, and it's cool work, and it's overground with it. It turns into like the Linux heartbeat stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is really just that simple, and some of it's very, very, very cool.
There's nothing cool. No, I mean, I'll take that back, because there's nothing cool about using shell scripts to replace that functionality.
Okay.
Right? I mean,
performance and sane, yes, but let me throw this one out, though. The number of checks, just in terms of living with the stuff on a regular basis. For the CARP stuff, we're using that with pfSense. Love that to death, all right? Got a brand new junior SA working with me who already understands it after 2 months and has never touched any of this before, and he's actually done some very cool things with it. So, yay, pfSense. But the with all that stated, the actual, when you're living with it, the failure states are awesome. You can pull the plug out the back, nothing drops, nothing hangs, everything's wonderful from the application's perspective. Coming back up after a failure, there's enough safety mechanisms that are built into CARP that it is not uncommon that you'll actually have some very funky behavior for a number of seconds, which can be, from what I've experienced regularly, up to 5, maybe 3. So that gets to a point where the low-level implementation there versus the shell script running and all of the checks that you're going to want to be doing back and forth, to me, kind of I shrug my shoulders a little bit and go, you know, you're going to lose something. It's all about how much money and time and energy your problem's worth. So for me, 5 seconds of, for the business model that I'm looking at, 5 seconds of things just kind of like hanging there before the shells come back, before web service comes back, before all the stuff comes back. Wow, way more acceptable than waiting for 30 minutes to get a SA out of bed, or you know, to get the knock to know exactly what to do to solve a problem, to nail it, to drill in on that one component that's failed. 30 minutes and
you got
5 seconds are a lot of money. So, say what?
You got a system with a 30-minute SLA. That's pretty
impressive. Well, yeah, exactly. You know, like the reality of all this stuff. And to be really straight, a lot of this stuff has come out of an OCD. I've worked in very small environments for a long time with large ambitions, and the and with that stated, the lone SA, right, with a bunch of helpers kind of coming with them behind, this is a really disconcerting position to be in, right? This is a really hard person to be. So the only reason that I would even think of bringing all this, and I'm an austere, anybody who knows me, I'm a really austere bastard. I do not like complex or newfangled things. The only reason I would even contemplate this level of complexity in what we're doing, with this, is in its value and what it affords to the organizations I work for, and to me being able to do things like sleep or take care of it tomorrow, or you know what I mean, like finish dinner with my wife, like stuff like that's become more important in life than hitting the pager at 3 a.m. So, anyways, that's it. That's my spiel. Any other questions? Going once, going twice?
Linux HA and Veritas HA both are powered by shell scripts based on checking
FMAP. Yeah, to be really straight, a lot of application level, actually I'll go on with one more thing for a second, because you bring up some interesting places where we've explored that, and we've ended up adapting things from some of those tools. Your application. So working in web shops, web applications, big things. There's all kinds of stuff in an application. If you have logged in users, you are storing state, right? Without getting fancy about it, in computers, that's just called state. Well, sessions and the way your sessions are handled and stored and the application deals with it and all this stuff, right? You got to figure out where and how you're going to distribute state across your application cluster. You've got to, in this kind of environment, you got to figure out what happens to that state if half of your machines suddenly become unavailable, right, what your policies are. And these all become business choices, right? Like, is it okay with our application if half the users have to log back in again? Because the cost of solving that problem is like this. Is it worth that to us, or should we just deal with it, right? We didn't lose everything, and they can log right back in, right? So you start weighing all these things. Those kinds of tools become really, really invaluable, not just for your box being available, but to actually start plugging into your applications and being able to do very, very, very simple things to massage what's going on in your app without doing heavy re-engineering of your application, right? So I'm actually a big fan of, like, everybody go home and read all of those shell scripts line by line by breakfast. So, anyways. What? Yeah, all of it. Anything. If anybody buys me a drink, no, I don't want a drink tonight, I actually want to sleep. If anybody wants to talk after this, I will explain what kind of nightmarish situations you can get into and how wonderful you can actually deploy things if you then bring CARP back in at the backside of this network across those lagged machines. Going back into your environment. You can do some pretty neat stuff. You can also really quickly kill yourself. Because every time you add some redundant layer of something, you just multiply that against the surface area of stuff you already have that's complex. So you can get into some mind-bending problems really quickly. This is totally some Superman Bizarro stuff. It gets weird. So, cool. Anyways, thanks everybody.
All right, Mark is now going to actually do the cleanup after Ike.
Woo!
Because Mark, again, is going to be talking about lag trunk.
Some other stuff.
And some other stuff?
I need 2 seconds to here, so you don't read my email.
Okay.
I don't know how to do it right.
I don't know how to do anything.
You just read which boxes.
Yeah. Poorly sometimes, too. Yeah, that rebooting, by the way, that's pulling the power cord out. No, I don't want to log in with Robin.
No, that's not a key. Use my saved login.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
All that. I trust you, Mark, to not screw me.
Yeah, same here.
So if I was you, I would have logged in as a different user. But
there are no other users on my machine. I use it. Nobody else.
And you don't have like XEV running in the background, just capturing everything that I'm doing.
Well, that would be screwing you. So don't screw me.
Okay. This is so damn hard to type on.
It's much more paranoia. It's perfect.
Assured mutual destruction. Yeah. Virtual mutual destruction.
Hey, that works.
Childhood of 80s.
Never. I don't believe you do actually use this thing during the day.
Mike, do you ever use have you ever used AP switches?
Are you having trouble with my networks?
Yeah, your Farley laptop is just a bit too small here. I'm getting there. Maybe you can help me with something.
What are you doing?
I had downloaded some stuff off Google.
What is your? You know, the problem is that the resolution has shrunk.
Yeah, that's fine. Let me point this out.
That amp with the big gear kit is that there is no. Make it scan again.
I can do that. How do I make this bigger? Can I do full screen? Let's see.
You know what button it is?
Yeah, I know.
But I can't see the fucking button.
That port. Okay. It's a label. Don't plug into that port. Nobody.
Hey, does that work? Yeah, sort of. Look, I wrote a bunch of stuff. Maybe it makes sense.
Yeah. If you get one big point going, I don't typically have a lot of time just sitting with all of the.
How do you do this with me, though?
Get really involved.
I want to do this for a while. I don't want to have a TV screen. That's way too small.
Yeah, completely
above.
Yeah, but they're cheap. They're about
they're going to put it to like high end ones.
Yeah,
you're
just
talking 50 right now. Something like that. 5500.
Yeah, that would be
probably a lot easier.
I have
full screen. No. Hell no.
I really would like to. Much more stripped down.
How's that?
Not
you can read that, right? In the back? Yeah? Anybody listening? Cool.
Can you tilt the thumbnail?
Nah, let's see. Hey, there we go. Great idea.
Have you heard of using
those
for complex?
I was kind of lazy with this, so I wrote this in a silly manner.
Like the same language as iOS.
All right.
And well, they're only principally
just a. All right, so I'll be brief. I got two things to talk about. So I'm Mark. How you doing, everybody? So there was a little bit of confusion, and Ike and I kind of overlapped each other a little bit. But I do have another thing to talk about, and I'll get to that in a minute, which is how to look at TCP2. Anyway, so Layer 2 Link Aggregation, the LACP is the title I'm talking about. And that's my name. So I can't really read this. But basically, LACP is one of the control protocols that LAG or trunk or AGR can use. And they are the physical bonding mechanisms for two Ethernet ports that Free, Open, and NetBSD want to use at this point. There are some earlier ways of doing this in FreeBSD using NetGraph. There's NetGraph one-to-many, which is a older way that doesn't really have any switch side sort of control mechanism for it. It's kind of like using what I was talking about with failover. You kind of have to trust your better judgment on whether or not you want to deal with it doing split brain sort of shit and causing problems. But one of the reasons for using LACP was that the big vendors like Cisco and Juniper and all these other big people out there, they wanted to make a sort of non-vendor specific way of creating these channels for using multiple Ethernet interfaces together. And like I said, it's not perfect, but it's definitely a lot better than having, you know, some implementations that only worked on you know, some old version of Red Hat Linux, or only worked on Solaris, or were Windows only with an add-on, which was the case before LACP was out there. So where can you use LACP? Well, you can use it on pretty much everything but Dragonfly and Windows. And I'll get to that in a second. But FreeBSD has LAG, NetBSD, OpenBSD is trunk, and NetBSD is AGR. And LAG and trunk are derived from the same project, which is, LAG and trunk, yeah, are from OpenBSD's trunk. They generally have the same features. Trunk's current implementation of 4.8 has some newer stuff that hasn't yet made it back into FreeBSD. That being said, trunk is pretty much the most feature-full version out there. It doesn't support everything that LACP offers, but it's probably the best in terms of this sort of model that you can follow. AGR and NetBSD was sort of homegrown. It does not have many configuration options. There's pretty much one.
Is it supported by Linux bonding?
Does it support which?
Is it supported by Linux bonding?
Yeah, Linux bonding.
No, these are all
is doing the same thing as.
Okay.
Yeah. So for the most part, the one thing I couldn't figure out is if there is an LACP implementation that you could use between two servers. And I don't believe there is one, but I thought of that as sort of like, you know, maybe you have two machines that are very far apart on a private network and you want to use some fiber optic cables between them, and you want to have some sort of redundant fiber connection between these two very distant machines. And you didn't want to use failover. You wanted to use both ports actively. I don't know if there's a way to actually facilitate doing something like that without having one of these fancy switches in between.
So there's a difference between the client side of this and
the
server side of
it? Yeah, so let me go down here a little bit. So what is supported? I should make this a little smaller.
Can you do like control minus or something like that? Or?
Yeah, see, I don't know if that's too small. Oh, no, that's good. Sorry. So the trunk and lag driver, which I'll talk about first, there's a number of sort of protocols or methods which you can configure them. The only one that FreeBSD doesn't support here is broadcast, but the other methods are supported by both trunk and lag. I don't know exactly how broadcast works, but I believe your switches have to support the broadcast mechanism for dealing with it. Failover, which is what Ike is using, is pretty much switch independent. It's use one port of your channel until the other one stops working.
Balance, failover and round robin.
Oh, yes, round robin. Round robin is an interesting one because you.
Why don't you use load balance?
Load balance requires control protocol.
Yeah.
So round robin is an interesting one because there is a control protocol for round robin, but I don't know what the hell it does. I couldn't figure that out, and I think it's just the switch and your client just say, hey, we both doing round robin, and they go, hey.
Raise a lot of packets. That's what
yeah.
Is it like part of mine? No, I think that is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
bonding and tiny IP address, you can actually have them art like other IP addresses or other interfaces or like paying other IP addresses to determine their own health.
Yeah, so the point with LACP was that the switch can make that determination for you. So if a switch port dies, it's telling one of these channel partners, as they call it, you know, one of your physical interfaces, that there's a problem. So you take over because I know you're still healthy. And doing that, it also brings up an interesting problem, which I kind of talked about, which is how do you synchronize CAN tables or ARP tables between two switches? And fact of the matter is, unless you pay megabucks, you don't. And you run into these situations where you have to physically make one ARP medium, like what I was saying, where you use trunking between two switches and you connect them together to make one ARP medium or one switch medium for them to deal with. When you don't have that, which I found this out a while ago, when you try and have two switches that can't communicate to each other, it'll work maybe like 60% of the time. And then you'll have a port fail and something strange will happen where it comes back to life and your ARP table is completely hosed. But the point with all of this was the vendors wanted to make something that they could sell you that was better than just the shell scripts, as far as I can tell. The things that you can't do, though, with just the shell scripts that are pretty neat, are the LACP and load balance methods, which are sort of spray packets out of both interfaces at the same time based on some metric. All right, so the nuts and bolts of it. So what I have here is not highlighted in red here. Hold on, how do you do this? I wish you knew how to use Linux and figure this out. So I've got like sort of simple mechanisms here to create an LACP channel on FreeBSD and OpenBSD here, and they're very similar. I mean, they're pretty much the same code. And down below, we've got the AGR example, which is slightly different because AGR is its own thing. The main difference, AGR is pretty much only allowing you to do, what it's called now. It allows you to specify like how the link is going to be used, but all the configuration has to be done from the switch side down. So AGR prevents you from doing things like failover. You can't use it in that mechanism to have one port active and one port not active. The switch has to make that determination. So you're kind of locked into like one of these expensive vendors at that point. All right. So some of like the interesting things you can do, like what Ike was talking about with FreeBSD and OpenBSD, is you can do failover. One port is active, one port is not active. And so some of the interesting things you can do with that is documented for both Free and Open is that you could have a lag interface or a trunk interface between a wired and a wireless port. Now, LACP itself kind of says, be careful of this, because you can't use the LACP control protocol with two completely different speed types. In other words, like what George said before, you can't really make a 10 meg switch and a 100 meg switch, or a 100 meg and a gigabit switch play nice together like that. It'll go berserk. But with failover, you can do some fairly interesting things, like you could have a G speed wireless and a 100 meg wired working together. And the purpose of this would be if you're in your house and you've got a wireless network and you've got a wired network and you're moving between your living room to your office or something, when you get to your office you plug your wired in, you want to turn off the wireless. There are other ways of doing it, but
sounds great. It's a pretty intense production environment.
Yes. So some of the other more exotic things that I've seen with it are using fiber and copper together. And I've seen this in some industrial environments where
you know, they reached the limitation of how long they could run their copper Ethernet. And so they had what they were calling speed bump switches or Ethernet repeaters along the way to extend their copper Ethernet farther. The reason why they had copper Ethernet was they had a single mode fiber link going from the device out in the field back to their switch infrastructure where their patrolling mechanism was, and they needed a way to have a redundant link on that. And they decided that two fibers was too expensive, and having some sort of mixed topology would be better for them, bring in some sort of, I don't know, extra spice into the environment. But
extra latency.
Yeah, it does bring in some very interesting problems. But speed bump switches, essentially think of it just as a two-port switch. You know, it takes 100 meg in, it spits 100 meg out. There was a purpose for these a long time ago when I think you had to go from like 1 meg to 100 meg. And you had to deal with screwed up duplex things, and there was some rationale for them. I can't remember exactly what. But basically, your only purpose at this point in time is for just copper Ethernet repeaters. What's up?
Is it because Verizon could never figure out what duplexes actually works?
It's a good possibility.
A market for competing to.
Yeah. I think. Yeah, there's. Some type of WAN interface, and I don't remember exactly which, where the Ethernet side of it, but it handed off, could only do half duplex. And these devices were created to show the, you know, the client, yo, we have full duplex connections. You know, and this little speed bump would deal with all of that awesome stuff. But provided in a lagger trunk, I'm trying to get back on topic, that you're dealing with the same speed or a similar enough speed and the same duplex, you can create a failover using two different types of media. I don't actually know if 100 base SX is explicitly supported by EM, but I just made up an example. 100 base SX would be single mode fiber, so you know, maybe you've got a mile long fiber link somewhere and a bunch of annoying copper repeaters every so often. It's technically doable, whether it's going to work well for you in a failover setup or, you know, solder problem is a whole other thing. It's just more of a, you can do it if you want to try. It's no worse than creating a Atheros and, you know, Intel EM NIC failover, in my opinion, because they're both very different types of networking. One is Ethernet and one is Ethernet-like. So, hey, it can't hurt if you're doing two types of Ethernet together at the same time. Anyway. So that's my quick little thing about what LACP and Trunk and Live do. And I hope that helped. I hope I didn't confuse the hell out of everybody with that.
It makes sense.
Yeah, it was kind of an actually
had
all the important details.
Oh, see. Does anybody have any questions? Because I have another thing I can go into real quick after this. No? Okay.
Was there something in the app config that controls which mode?
Like, oh yeah, there is.
Or
it's a trunk proto or lag proto, depending on where you are.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So right here.
Yeah.
Whoa, that's not useful at all. Yeah. So trunk proto, obviously for trunk, and lag proto for lag at the top of the screen. And
LACP.
Yeah. So right there, it's just LACP. Okay.
Just similar.
It's up there so long, I've forgotten what it was.
Yeah. All right, so let me get the my other thing real quick out of here. This is my new thing. I've been doing this.
Good question, really.
Sure.
Expound a little bit more on the screens with the switches, the fancy stuff.
Yes.
I'd like to hear about that.
Let me disconnect this so you don't read all my awesome stuff that's in here.
RSync new.
Yeah. How do you download this crap? Hold on 1 second for me. This is doing some. Oh yeah, I can probably do this right. So the fancy stuff. Who asked? Ike. With load balancing, you can specify particular load balancing metrics that you want to use. from the switch side back to the clients. I was given this from our networking people with a grain of salt that it's doable. It's not supported. And this is from a Cisco perspective. This was a Cisco show. You've got to be running a new enough version of iOS. It works in CatOS. It doesn't work incredibly well, but if you have the latest supervisors and the latest catalysts, you can, latest supervisors, latest catalyst infrastructure, and the latest version of iOS, you can have fast cam synchronization between two chassis. So if you have two, like, 6500 sized chassis, whatever the latest model of those is called now, probably 6800 or something. If you have two of those, the right mix of parts from Cisco, they can synchronize cam tables between blades, between chassis. So now, while they are two separate devices, they have their own sort of like arc failover between the switching infrastructure. And then at that point, you can also have these LACP type bonds between these things, but I believe it also has like a requirement of like you need multiple 10 gig trunks between the switches to do all this fancy stuff. So it's not like, it's not super cheap and it's not super easy because you have to have exactly all the right parts in here. But you can do some fancy things where, okay, I want to take traffic out of this port now because the other port's got more saturation. So you can get into that sort of level of thing. And I believe there was even a way to like probe the server for some kind of health and see what it was doing. I don't know if that's even supported, because I know there's a caveat in the man pages that doesn't support server tokens, and I think that's what that refers to. I couldn't find anybody who actually knew how to do that either. I think it's just one of these things you get to read about when you're doing your Cisco cert, and you go, okay, here you go.
I know with the load balancing, there's a layer of hashing algorithm depending on the traffic, but based on the host that it's going to and the port that it's going to, it'll send out different interfaces to load balance between them.
Well, it gets scary with Cisco because they bought so many damn people, and there's so many different versions of like their load balancers. But the way that it does it switch-wise is like its own thing, and I know they have like. This is basically a lot of IT traffic that's going between the switches themselves that you wouldn't see as like a switch consumer. Like you've got some server plugged in there. You wouldn't see this traffic. You wouldn't be able to tell that it's there. Right. Like these two switches would talk to each other and say, like, I've got this, you've got that. Let's come to some agreement. Let's go do our thing. And I think you actually need a like a witness server to do this as well. That I couldn't actually get a solid answer on. Some people were saying that to do this, they were using like a Linux box to kind of facilitate these synchronizations, but I don't know if that was like a hard requirement or if that was just something somebody cobbled together because, you know, they were running CatOS and they didn't have the right feature set, so they were just doing, you know, show can, and fussing the results back onto the two switches or something like that. But it's all doable. What's up?
Sorry, thank you. One more question. Have you seen any of the vendors then starting to talk about or think about securing or any look at these security-related aspects to LACP, LAG, in particular?
Well,
from my perspective, it looks from we've been using things for a while. Like, I can, off the top of my head, think of some very, very good things to take my world completely down to all this wonderful stuff.
I think it assumes a layer of security. A layer of security from, like,
physical.
Yeah, you need to ensure that you have physical security on a lot of these things.
But the other thing is, protocols have any security.
Yeah, these are kind of like inside your secure network sort of things that you could do. I know, like, using it for failover for, like, the laptop idea, wireless or wired, or, you know, say somebody gets some crazy idea, they're going to put wireless cards on all their servers, so if, all the wired links fail, they'll start some kind of ad hoc wireless network. You are so doing that when you get that.
You're speaking right to Ike.
Yeah. Those, I mean, even of itself, I mean, I said it right there. It assumes that you've got a lot of security that you'd never do this. But the crazy thing is, not to get like too wildly off topic, but when you get to sensor networks typically do things like this when they're in industrial environments. Like, they'll say, let's use a wireless mechanism for sending our traffic back, because who the hell wants to want to wire through, you know, our chemical plant? You know, let's do it wirelessly. And, you know, somebody will say, well, we need a wire on that because I don't trust this wireless shit. So they go out and they run a wire for it. And the thing is that, like, okay, well, which one do you want to use? Well, let's use a wireless one. That's the new cool technology. Okay, well, if the wireless stops working, you go to the wire. But you've already introduced, like, so many ways to screw this whole thing up. You know, you're using some kind of wireless protocol that, is it secure? Who the hell knows, you know? How far does it broadcast? Well, broadcast far enough to make it through my plant, so... You know, hopefully that's just far enough, not too far, and it can get really disgusting, you know, as you start to think about these sort of things. It's another, like, gaping hole when you think about it, if you're using it in an insecure environment. I hope that answers it. But
yeah, I can go shut it all off.
Lee, cancel my order for some cards.
I'm going to switch back to an Atari when we're done with this talk, by the way. Okay.
Oh, you're back.
I'm back? Okay, so, hey, look, I've got some pictures up here. So where's my other one? Is it untitled? Yep, look at me. Okay, there we go. So, TTP tuning and graphing. And originally, what I was going to talk about here was, like, the awesome secret sauce that I know that nobody else did, but then I realized that I'm just a moron. I don't know shit. So, what it boils down to is I wanted to talk about just a little bit on when I was presented with a problem of how to graph something and how to visualize the answers I was getting back. I ran into, like, a sort of conundrum where I think there's a little bit of people accept the way RRD graphs or MRTG graphs and how it smooths out data because it's cool, it works well, it doesn't grow exponentially, you know, because it rolls over in here. And it's not great for everything because of that. And I guess most people kind of understand this, that, like, you know, if you wanted to graph, you know, how many times, you know, you went to the bathroom last night or something silly, you wouldn't use RRD for that. I mean, you could, but, I mean, there's probably an easier way to do that.
It depends on whether there's a SNP in your toilet.
Right. But there's a manual method of doing this, too. You could write down, I went at, you know, 2 a.m. and 6 a.m., so on and so forth. So what I'm getting at is that sometimes there's a simpler way to do it. And, you know, I was thinking about this one day at work, and I kind of thought about, you know, when you're a kid and you learn how to graph the first time, you just take out some graph paper, you draw, you know, okay, I got a point here, and you connect the dots, okay, you got a graph, it's beautiful, it's great. And you can visualize your information. And the point with all this was that I want the simplest way to graph something. I don't want to have to set up cacti to find out how much traffic I'm doing. And I want to be able to do this fast enough where I want to run a test, get a result back, draw a picture.